Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
Not bad. What about you?
I don't really know. I'm having a time. New lockdown measures introduced. That are going to put an unnecessary target on our BIPOC members of our community. Just saying.
Which
Black Indigenous people of color, I'm very, very sorry. Just putting that out there, that Douglas has introduced this. Dougie.
We don't like
it. Okay. That's our political talk for the day. Well, actually, it's not, but it's our political talk of Ontario in 2021.
Yes. Modern political talk.
Like, I don't know, guys. It's just been, like, it's our spring break, but, like, there's nothing to do. So, basically, I do the exact same thing every day and, like, fall asleep and then don't wake up until, like, 10:30 because I'm just so done.
Yeah.
The longer you sleep, the less day you have. Like, I like the night, so I sleep in. No one else is awake during the night. I just do what I want.
True.
Mom, if you're listening, I don't do anything illegal. Just wanted to put that out there. I mean, illegal now is literally just, like, gathering people that aren't in your house, so outside. So
we're not doing that.
We're not doing that. Definitely not. I haven't even spoken to anyone other than my family. It's so just a lot, but it's fine. I have to make banana muffins with my brother today, and I'd rather throw things at his head. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing great.
We're doing amazing.
Yeah. Okay, so today is part 4 of Mary Tudor, because I can't smush things down, but also, like, she was in the public eye for her entire life, so it's kind of different than, like, someone who didn't come into it until later on.
Yeah. Woo.
Woohoo. Yeah. So, this is covering Mary's life from Edward's accession to the throne in 1547 to his death in 1553. Rip Edward.
Rip.
But, like, we already covered Edward's reign in our last mini-cast, so, like, if you don't know anything about it, go listen to that. But, like, I will talk a little bit, just, like, we're not going in depth. Because, you know, that's not what we're here to do.
No. No, sir.
Not at all. Not at all. Okay, so, Henry VIII died on January 28th, 1547. Everyone is aware of that. And if you weren't, now you are. And so I think it's really cool. He probably doesn't think it's cool, but he died on, like, the same day that, like, his birthday is, like, June 28th, and he died on January 28th, and that makes me really happy that it matches up like that. That's really sad, yeah. But I don't care. It makes me happy.
It's fine.
Okay, at 3 in the afternoon, don't know why we need the specific, but it was there, so I brought it in. Of Monday, January 31st, 1547, King Edward VI, who's 9 years old, enters the city of London to, like, take possession of his kingdom. You know, they probably literally just told him that his dad died since they didn't tell the children right away. Basically, like, he comes in and there's, like, guns being fired from ships on the Thames as, like, so that the nobility accompany Edward to his, like, kingdom, his lodgings. They all have to swear oaths to Edward because, you know, he's in charge now, not Henry. So they have to be like, I'm loyal to you. But his counselors cried, God save the noble King Edward. I'm just saying, like, 9-year-old boys are kind of annoying.
Yeah.
And if I was a 9-year-old boy and all these, like, men who are, like, really important started, like, screaming, God save the king at me, I feel like I'd get a big head.
Yeah.
I mean, no offense, Edward, but, like, that's not really your fault. Edward thanked them, and he goes to the tower, not as a prisoner. The tower is also a palace. He goes there for the next 3 weeks until after his father's funeral takes place and preparations are made for his own coronation. So, yeah, I love how they're just like, oh, two of your stepmoms. Well, I guess Anne wasn't a stepmom. Your sister's mother and your stepmom got, like, killed there, but you can just go stay there. Not creepy at all.
No.
From the tower, he wrote letters of condolence to Catherine Parr and to his sister, Mary, who's now, she's 31 right now, and she's in Catherine Parr's household. I guess they just, like, kept her there because, you know, it's been, like, a few days. As Edward Hall wrote in his chronicle, the late king, so Henry, was buried at Windsor with much solemnity. Yeah. And the officers broke their staves. I'm pretty sure that those are, like, their thing that, like, signifies that they're loyal to Henry. So they break them and, like, hurl them into the grave with Henry. But then they get new ones when they come to the tower. To, like, show that they're now loyal to Edward.
Right.
I'm, like, 95% sure that's what it is. I'm not nobility in the 16th century. But now that Henry is laid to rest, Edward's reign can be formally inaugurated. So he can get crowned. Yay.
Yay.
He was anointed and crowned with the crown of Edward the Confessor, the imperial crown, and a third crown that they made especially for his small head. Because he's 9.
Because he's not.
Yeah, just like this massive crown on his head. Normally, the imperial crown actually wasn't part of the crowning ritual, but its inclusion here emphasized the imperial status of the king and echoed the triple crowning of the pope. So basically, they're like, we don't have a pope. Edward's the pope, but like not the pope. The spurs, orb, and scepter were then presented to the young king, and they sang him Te Deums, the Latin song thing, right. As the Lord's spiritual and temporal paid him homage. So he's been crowned. Yay for Edward.
Yay, Edward.
when he recalled the coronation in his journal, because he's a good little boy and keeps a journal. Honestly, every single historical figure that keeps a journal, I would like to give like a lot of thank yous to, because that's like so good. Like, if some of them had kept journals, we could have known so much more about what actually happened in their lives.
Exactly.
Just saying. Yes. But in his journal, he only noted that he had sat next to his uncle Edward Seymour and Archbishop Thomas Cranmer, and that he had worn the crown on his head. Thanks a lot, Edward. That's really descriptive. Like, I thought he was supposed to be really smart. Just saying. But the emperor and, like, the pope didn't immediately recognize the new king, because in the eyes of Catholic Europe, Edward was actually illegitimate and Mary was the lawful heir. Because they don't recognize Henry and Jane's marriage because it was under the Church of England. So, like, Mary is like, yeah, y'all can be married, I guess, because her mom was dead when they got married.
Yeah.
But the Pope and Charles are like, no, you guys didn't get married in a Catholic ceremony. Charles returned Edward's, like, formal greetings without actually explicitly acknowledging his title. And he said to his ambassador, Van der Delft, we went no farther than this with regard to the young king in order to avoid saying anything which might prejudice the right that our cousin the princess might advance to the throne. Charles's sister, Mary of Hungary, regent of the Netherlands, wrote to Van der Delft, we make no mention at present of the young prince, as we are ignorant as yet whether or not he will be recognized as king. We likewise refrain from sending you any letters for our cousin, the Princess Mary, as we do not yet know how she will be treated.
I see.
Maybe y'all should just send some letters to the king. Yeah. The French, because, you know, the French like to fight with the English and the emperor a lot. It's like all three of them, they got their little, like, triangle. It's like a love triangle, except it's like a hate triangle.
Yes, I see.
He is trying to drive a wedge between England and, like, the Holy Roman Emperor, and he claimed that the emperor planned to make war on the English in support of Mary's claim, but Mary accepted her brother as Henry's rightful heir, and she didn't make any challenge. She was like, yeah, he's a boy, so go ahead. In his will, Henry had confirmed that Mary had the right to the succession and granted her and Elizabeth a yearly income of £3,000 each in money, plate, jewels, and household stuff. And upon their marriage, they each got a dowry of £10,000. But that's like £10,000 in like their money. So it's probably like a lot more now.
Yeah.
They, but like, basically, when Edward took the throne, the regency counselors, like, split up the lands and titles and estates among themselves. But they were trying to secure Mary's support for Edward as well.
Right.
Because, like, she could probably get, like, you know, not as much, like, not as many as if, like, Elizabeth had been on the throne. But since it was Edward, like, she still probably could get a few people to come and fight on her side.
Yeah.
Including the emperor, who has, you know, his own army. So she got lands and estates in East Anglia and the home counties valued at, like, over £3,000. Chill. Most of what she got consisted of properties in Norfolk, Suffolk, and Essex, including Hunsdon and Beaulieu, which is Newhall. Beaulieu, I guess. I literally can't speak French. Where she had spent much of her time. So those are already, like, her favorite homes that she's at a lot. And Kenninghall in Norfolk, which is the home of Catholic Thomas Howard, like Anne and Kitty's uncle. Duke of Norfolk, because on the eve of Henry's death, he actually got attainted for treason and went to the Tower.
Yay!
He was in the Tower for, like, Edward's entire reign, but Mary let him out, like, when she ascended the throne, I'm pretty sure. I just know that he didn't die. Like, he didn't get his head chopped off. He did die. He's dead.
He is dead.
He's actually still living, guys.
He's still alive. Just like Elvis Presley.
He's the current Duke of Norfolk. All in all, Mary got 32 principal manors and a number of minor ones, which she later exchanged for Framlingham Castle in Suffolk. 32 houses, bestie. Yeah, so obviously, she's now 31. She's one of the wealthiest peers in England, no duh. And she's a significant regional magnate. So she got to choose her own household, and she surrounded herself with Catholic men that were local to her estates, such as Sir Francis Englefield, Sir Robert Rochester, and Rochester's nephew, Edward Waldegrave, who also shared her commitment to Catholicism. Many of the women she chose, they were all also very Catholic. Jane Dormer, Natalie, is that your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother? Probably. Eleanor Kemp and Susan Clarencius, they were already in her service, and they remained with her for, like, I'm going to assume until she died. Because, you know, she died pretty young. Yeah. Her household was basically just, like, a bunch of Catholic people who were all loyal to her. So that would be a little suspicious if you were trying to, you know, make sure that she didn't rise up against you. Just saying. Ordinances were drawn up at Kenninghall providing for religious services. They paid particular importance and, like, attention to the observance by all of her servants. They all had to do it, of Matins, Mass, and Evensong. Every gentleman, basically everyone in her household that didn't have a good reason to not be there had to be at the services every single day. Right. Fun. To be in Mary's service, you had to live as a Catholic, because to her, service and, like, you know, religion were bound together. So they got to do it. But, so she's still with Catherine Parr, like, at the moment, but in April 1547, she leaves her. Bye, Catherine. Bye. She had remained with Catherine since her father's death, but she journeyed north to her new estates. Within weeks, Catherine rekindled her relationship with Thomas Seymour, and in May, they were secretly married.
Wow.
No. No thanks. Seymour really wanted Mary's approval, because, you know, he wants, like, Catherine's stepdaughters to, like, approve of their marriage, which, like, is fair. Yeah. But she didn't like it. She had thinly veiled disapproval, is what this says. She declared that, being a maid, she was nothing cunning about wooing matters. However, Henry was as yet very ripe in her own remembrance, and she found it strange news. She said, "It standeth lest with my poor honor to be a meddler in this matter, considering whose wife her grace was of late." Yeah. She's like, you were literally just my dad's wife. He's been dead since January. It's May.
Huh.
What the heck? That's really fast. I mean, anyone that knows anything knows that, like, Catherine Parr didn't love Henry and wanted to marry Thomas Seymour before she got married to him. But, like, still, yeah. You know, that's not really the proper amount of time to wait. Like, no matter what, it's kind of rude, especially since he's the king.
Yeah.
It just looks really, it looks really bad. yeah. Initially, relations between Mary and Edward's regime were, like, very amicable. The Lord Protector, Somerset, was previously actually in the service of the Emperor at the Imperial Court, and his wife was formerly in the household of Catherine of Aragon. Mary addressed her as my good gossip and my good Nan, and signed off a letter to her, your assured friend to my power, Mary. So, like, they're friends right now. As Christmas approached, Edward wrote to Mary, and he was like, come spend Christmas with Elizabeth and I at court. So, like, Elizabeth is here, so why aren't you here, Mary? We miss you. Come visit us.
Right.
It's actually, it's kind of, like, a little, the letter's funny. He's like, sister, her right dear and right entirely beloved sister, the Lady Elizabeth, having made suit to visit us, hath since her coming desired to remain with us all this Christmas holidays. It's like, but you're not here, so you should come too. However, Edward did conclude the letter with the suggestion that if Mary's health wasn't good, she could postpone her visit to another occasion when it was, like, good for her. So that's nice.
Yeah.
You know. Since we know that she doesn't have the best health, so it's nice that he cares. Although the new evangelical establishment was determined to overturn Henry's Act of Six Articles, which, like, made things more Catholic-ish, at first it proceeded cautiously. Negotiations for peace with France had ended with the French king's death at the end of March, and in April Charles had defeated the German Protestants at Mühlberg. So England was diplomatically isolated, and it wasn't a good time to champion religious reform. But, you know, they only thought that for a little bit of time. Soon, they were very keen to press ahead with the process of reformation. Within 3 months, every parish was to have the Bible in English, sermons were to be preached regularly, and priests were told to recite the Lord's Prayer, Creed, and Ten Commandments in English. When Bishops Edmund Bonner and Gardiner protested against the injunctions, they were imprisoned.
Fine.
Gotta love locking people up. It was the prelude to even further change. In Edward's first parliament, which opened on November 4th, 1547, the Act of Six Articles and the Treasons Act were repealed, marriage was made legal for the clergy, and everyone was supposed to have communion in, like, both kinds. So basically, Mary's not happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. As the practices of Catholicism came under attack, Mary made her devotion to the religion very, very clear. She heard up to 4 masses every single day in her chapel at Kenning Hall.
Sure.
It's a lot, Mary. she wrote to Somerset protesting at the fantasy of and the newfangleness of the regimes and declared that the Henry's religion had been established by parliamentary statute and it was illegal to defy it. Her father had left the realm in godly order and quietness, and the council was disrupting that with their new innovations. She didn't think that any change should be made to the religious settlement imposed by the Act of Six Articles until Edward came of age and was old enough to make his own decisions about religion.
I see.
Mary really doesn't think that Edward is old enough to do anything on his own. This is going to be a recurring theme. Somerset was like, he was like, I'm so astonished at your mean attitude, Mary. That's not nice. The words that you just said couldn't have proceeded from the sincere mind of so virtuous and wise a lady. He's like, what, Mary, what are you doing? Henry had, Somerset continued, died before he had achieved all that he wanted to do in terms of religion. So he's like, Mary, your dad died before he could continue to make the realm more Protestant. He didn't want to keep the Act of Six Articles. I don't know what you're talking about. And mm-hmm. Mary's like,
Okay.
Really? As the Act of Uniformity made its way through Parliament in January 1549, it made the Book of Common Prayer the only legal form of worship. I'm going to assume it's in English. Because, you know, common prayer. Confrontation between Mary and the Edwardian government was, like, inevitable. The book represented a significant break with the past. Now the number of saints' days was reduced. Those are basically, like, they celebrate the saints.
Right, yeah.
Fun. Only plain The vestments were to be worn by the priests, and the Latin Mass was to be said in English, and was now described as the Supper of the Lord and the Holy Communion, commonly called the Mass. The elevation of the host was abolished, and the Catholic doctrine of the sacrifice of the Mass was omitted. So basically, they're changing a lot about Mary's religion, and she's not liking it. Vanderdelf goes to visit her in late March, and she complains bitterly of the changes that were brought about in the kingdom, and she told him about how distressed she was privately. She said that she would rather give up her life than give up her religion. Can we spot a theme from when her mother told her that it was okay if they died because they were good in their religion, and so they're going to live in heaven, and they're going to be fine? What? Catherine's still affecting her? Oh my god. Huh? Thanks, Catherine. I mean, there's a lot of people that were like that back then, but, like, still, that's like... definitely coming. It's literally, like, parodying back from her mom. Once again, she looked to the emperor for protection against the law that was supposed to come into effect soon. She explained to him how, in these miserable times, he was her only refuge. Yeah. Days later, she addressed a letter directly to Charles. And she said, "We have never been in so great necessity, and I therefore entreat your majesty, considering the changes that are taking place in the kingdom, to provide, as your affairs may best permit, that I may continue to live in the ancient faith and in peace with my conscience. And whether or not it be true, I put it to your conscience." she feared that, except unless Charles interfered, she wouldn't be allowed to, continue to practice Catholicism. And she reaffirmed her commitment that in life and death, I will not forsake the Catholic religion of the Church, our mother. Charles was, like, really determined that he wouldn't let Mary be pressured. He's like, she's our close relative. Guess what, Charles? You're going to become her father-in-law soon. or allow religious innovations to cause Edward's government to assume a different and less suitable manner towards her. He ordered his ambassador to get a written promise in definite, suitable, and permanent form that, notwithstanding all new laws and ordinances made upon religion, that she would be allowed to continue to live in the observance of Catholicism as she had done up to the present, so that neither the king nor parliament may ever molest her directly or indirectly by any means whatever.
Wow.
You know what? That's nice, Charles. That's really nice of you to do that, though, because, like, she's probably freaking out, and you have power. Under instruction from the Emperor, Vanderdelft went to Somerset to try and get a guarantee of Mary's freedom of worship, because people should be allowed to worship what they want to worship. Mary. Literally, this makes me, like, mad, because, like, she was so concerned when she was under Edward's rule that, like, she couldn't practice her religion. She's like, they're gonna hurt me, and then literally, like, 5 years later, she's like, oh, you're Protestant, get to the, like, burning pile and step in. Like, okay, I understand it was because it was Catholicism, Mary, but, like, have a little compassion, bestie. But Somerset made it clear that it wasn't in his power to act against the laws passed by Parliament, and that the ambassador had asked for something dangerous to the kingdom. What? Because their thing is, if the king and his sister, to whom the whole kingdom was attached as heirs to the crown when Edward died, were to, like, disagree in matters of religion, dissension would certainly spring up. Somerset hoped that the Lady Mary would use her wisdom and conform with the king to avoid such an emergency and keep peace within the realm. This sounds like a threat to me. Mary, we all want you to be the heir. You're going to be the heir, Mary, when Edward dies. You can't disagree with him in religion because you don't want the kingdom to fight. Oh, my. Somerset, however, wanted to preserve his good relationship with the emperor. He couldn't act against statute, and he wouldn't grant, like, a formal dispensation for Mary to be immune from the laws, but he did make it clear that he had no intention of inquiring into the worship of her household until the king came of age. However, many people in the Privy Council disagreed, and they demanded that Mary submit to the law. Okay. On June 9th, 1549, the first English prayer book became law. Mary celebrated Latin Mass in her chapel at Kenny Hall amid incense, candles, and the chiming of bells. By doing that, she publicly signaled her opposition to the religious changes and defied Edward's authority as king, so the Privy Council responded very quickly. In a letter dated June 16th, Mary was given advice to be conformable and obedient to the law. Basically, Mass was no longer allowed to be celebrated in her house. Yeah. And her comptroller, Robert Rochester, and her chaplain, Dr. John Hompton, were summoned to court to receive further instructions. A week later, Mary responded directly to the charges by addressing Somerset and the rest of Edward's council. She would not change her practices and would obey only her father's laws, and she trusted that the council would no more to trouble and unquiet her with matters touching her conscience.
I see.
I don't really understand why Mary's like, yeah, Edward's king. I totally like agree with him, but she's like, I'm only gonna do what my dad told me to do. Oh, honey, my. He's dead. I think that I feel like maybe Mary knows that Edward isn't really running the show, and so she's like, yeah, no, yeah. We're not doing that. She did excuse from like following her the two men whose presence the council had demanded. Hopton because of his ill health, and Rochester because basically her house was run by him, so she's like, sorry, they can't come. Sorry, guys. In a subsequent letter to Somerset and the Privy Council, she expressed her anger and disappointment. She's like, for my part, I assure you all that since the king, my father, your late master and very good lord, died, I never took you for other than my friends, but in this it appeareth contrary. So she's like, guys, I thought we were friends, but, like, it doesn't seem like that anymore. You're acting like not very good friends.
Okay. I see.
I don't think she actually thought they were friends. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's just called. We use flowery language speak. But she did think that they wouldn't bother her. In their remembrance for certain matters appointed by the council to be declared to Dr. Hopton to the Lady Mary's grace for answer to her former letter. That's the title. I'm not kidding. It's like 12 words long at least. The Privy Council rebuffed her objections point by point, yet Mary remained immovable and resistant to any pressure. She was determined to defend her servants' rights to the free practice of their religion. Mary, why could you not have done this for the other people that you then killed? Like, double standards, huh? Double standards, Miss Girl. I don't approve. No. We don't approve, Mary. She described her staff as worthy people, ready to serve their king after their god to the whole extent of their power. They were like her own family, and she would stand by them no matter what. When Rochester and Hopton were instructed that they had to persuade Mary to conform to the religion, they were like, sorry, we literally can't, and so we also won't, so too bad for you. Rochester protested that it wasn't suitable that a servant should, like, disobey what his mistress wanted and discharge his domestic duties, and Hopton declared that he was Mary's servant, and so he obeyed her orders in her own house. They're like, she's telling us to do it, and she's in charge of us, so we're not gonna say no. Just like she had in years before, Mary gave the emperor a powerful hold over English politics, and the threat of war was hanging over the country. Sir William Paget was sent to the imperial court to renew and make fast the amity with the emperor. And he also was sent to make a formal proposition of marriage for Mary and the infant Dom Luis of Portugal, who was the emperor's brother-in-law and a longtime suitor for Mary's hand. Rich and Peter were to ask Mary to draft in her own hand a letter of recommendation introducing William Paget to ensure that he gained the emperor's favor. But she took the opportunity to defend her household. She's like, yeah, okay, I'll write the letter. But if the counselors speak to my servants as they threaten to do that, I'm also going to add a little extra part that tells the emperor how I'm being treated in religious matters. So the commissioners departed and they were like, we're sorry. I feel like she has a lot of power, and it's really funny. Okay, when Paget arrived at the imperial court in late July, Charles expressed great astonishment at the pressure that had been put on Mary to accept the changes in religion. He stressed that even if she were inclined to accept the reforms, he would do his best to tell her not to do it for everyone. She's like, our close relative, for we and those to our blood would grieve exceedingly if she were to change. He repeated his request for an assurance in writing or otherwise that she wouldn't be included in the regulations made by Parliament about religion, or be kept in suspense in the matter. I am thankful to Charles for continuing to fight on her behalf. Yeah, so, like, thanks. Because she probably would have done a lot of stupid stuff if he wasn't there. I feel like she's impulsive sometimes. The day after the prayer book was introduced at Samford, Courtenay, and Devon, local villagers petitioned the priest to defy the government. As John Hooker described it in his contemporary account of the rebellion, the priest yielded to their wills and forthwith clothed himself in his old popish attire and saith mass and all such services as in times past accustomed. So they had a little mini rebellion, and the news spread. A considerable force of Cornish men who were angry at the religious changes gathered near Exeter, and their manifesto demanded that they would have the mass in Latin as before. They would have holy bread and holy water made every Sunday. I don't really know what makes holy bread or holy water. I think a priest has to bless it. At my church, we just eat bread, but I also can't eat it because I'm allergic to it. So
why are you allergic to the bread?
I don't eat bread.
Oh,
because they get it from a bakery. Word. Thanks a lot, Trinity. Yeah, but I like the grape juice. Becca's church has actual wine. My church has grape juice. I'm kind of mad, but, like, whatever. They also would have psalms and ashes at the times accustomed, images set up again in every church, and all ancient old ceremonies used heretofore by our mother, the Holy Church. The rebels insisted that the Act of Six Articles of 1539 was reintroduced until Edward came of age. Just like Mary, that was what she wanted too. Here's the thing, though. There was also violence in Hertfordshire, Essex, Suffolk, and Norfolk. A lot of bad things happened. And since many of the rebellions occurred near Mary's estates, suspicion naturally fell on Miss Girl. So on July 18th, the council warned her that some of her servants were reported to have been chief in, like, the, they said, these commotions. I think that I'm going to start calling everything a commotion. One of her staff was active amongst the rebels at Samford, Courtenay, and Devon, and another, Thomas Poley, was declared to be a captain of the worst sort assembled in Suffolk. People were like, no, Mary wants to overthrow Edward. Fun. In a letter to the Secretary of State, William Cecil, Sir Thomas Smith disguised his accusations against Mary by writing in Latin and also referring to her in the masculine form. He said, Marius and the Marians, the fear which torments me to the point of destruction. Mary was like, besties, I didn't do it. She replied immediately, and she denied all charges made against her. She said that the uprisings no less offend me than they do you and the rest of the council. She's like, I'm really mad at them too. Rebellion is gross, guys. As for her chaplain being at Samford Courtenay, she's like, I don't have any chaplains there. And Polly has been in my household this whole time. So, shh. In the midst of the rebellion, as the French king declared war, Mary was able to continue to flout the law. As Somerset noted, whereas she used to have two masses said before, she now has three since the prohibitions and with greater show. I think that someone needs to have a little chat with her, but no one can because no one has any like power over her. Get Catherine of Aragon's ghost to come back. That one, that maybe wouldn't work. Maybe Jane Seymour. Be like, Mary, please listen to my child. The government needed to maintain the imperial alliance, so it was considered important that for now Mary was left alone to practice her religion. Somerset reasoned that if she didn't wish to conform, they should just let her do as she pleases, as long as it was quietly and without any scandal. But Edward was mad at Mary. So he wrote her a letter in August, and it says, we have somewhat marveled, and cannot but still marvel very much, what grounds or reasons have or do move you to mislike or refuse to follow and embrace that which by all the learned men of our realm hath been so set forth, and all our loving subjects obediently received, and knowing your good nature and affection towards us, we cannot think any other matter in this your refusal than only a certain grudge of conscience, for want of good information and conference with some goodly and well-learned men for remedy. So Mary was going to receive corrective instruction. She's getting classes on how to be a good Protestant, I guess. men that, like Edward said, were like for his religion would be chosen and sent to her, after which it was expected that her attitude would improve. But here's the thing. Mary's conscience had driven her into a position of direct opposition to the government. The girl who had been broken down and forced to yield her soul and the honor of her mother in fear of her father was now a mature woman of 33. She had her own lands, she had a following of her own, and she had the support of Emperor Charles V. Her brother, the king, was a child. She was not going to succumb again and give up what she held dear. So, she's like, no, besties,
no,
we're not doing that. It was the beginning of the end of Somerset's protectorate. Dudley and the conservative nobles, the Earl of Southampton and the Earl of Arundel, were plotting against him, and the country was drawing close to civil war. Dudley and his allies had asked Mary to support the coup against Somerset, but on the advice of the emperor, she had declined to get involved, because he's like, it's going to be really hazardous for you to take part in that. There now was like a struggle for power on the council, which raised hopes amongst Mary's Catholic supporters. Wriothesley reassured the ambassador that Mary would be allowed to hear mass, saying that those who have molested her will do so no more, and even though they were to begin afresh, she has many good servants of whom I hold myself to be one. Unfortunately, they were deceived. Dudley emerged as the new leader of the government and as Lord President of the Council, and despite earlier indications of conservative sympathies, was actually a supporter of even more evangelical reform. Mary got renewed pressure to conform to the religious practices.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so fun. When Van der Delft visited Mary early the following year, she told him that she considered Dudley to be the most unstable man in England, and that the conspiracy against the protector had envy and ambition as its motives. She was really anxious and fearful of what lay ahead. She said, "You will see that no good will come of this move, but that it is punishment from heaven and may be only the beginning of our misfortunes." And it was for this reason that she wished herself out of the kingdom. So just like before, when she was scared, right, she wants to leave again. Yeah. In December, Edward once more invited Mary and Elizabeth to spend Christmas at court. He wanted all three siblings to be together for the festivities, but Mary suspected a trap. I kind of feel bad. They're like, Edward and Elizabeth. They're like, we want our big sister to come see us for Christmas because both of our parents are dead. All of our parents are dead. Like, Catherine Parr might be dead by now. Low-key, she might be. I don't even know. I don't remember what year she died. I think she is dead. So they're like, literally everyone that's taken care of us is dead except for our sister. We want her to come to court. And she's like,
no,
like,
besties.
No, it's a trap. Maybe. Like, it kind of was a trap, but not by Edward. Like, I think that he honestly was like, can you come for... Oh, we'll see. He's like, Can you come for Christmas, Mary? And she's like, no. This is literally what she said. Okay. They wished me to be at court so that I could not get the mass celebrated for me, and that the king might take me with him to hear their sermons. I would not find myself in such a place for anything in the world. I will choose a more convenient time to go and pay my duty to the king, when I need not lodge at court, for I have my own establishment in London. I shall stay for 4 or 5 days only, and avoid entering into argument with the king, my brother, who, as I hear, is beginning to debate the question of religion, as he is being taught to do.
Oh my.
She's so, like, I feel like she'd be a conspiracy theory believer. Mary made her excuses on the grounds of ill health. Edward's not going to fight her on that, because he doesn't want her to be sick. It was a wise decision, actually. On Christmas Day, the king and council, heavily influenced by Dudley, publicly pledged to further the Reformation. In a letter written in the king's name to the bishops, Dudley challenged those evil-disposed persons who, since the apprehension of the Duke of Somerset, have brooded, I'm going to say like talked abroad that they should have again their old Latin services, their conjured bread and water with such vain and superstitious ceremonies, as if the setting forth of the said book had been the act of the Duke only. I'm pretty sure that's directed at Mary. The bishops were commanded to order the clergy to gather up all service books besides the Book of Common Prayer and to deface or destroy them and send to prison anyone who refused to obey. It's fine. By late January, pressure was mounting on Mary again. England had signed a peace treaty with France, and so their, like, necessity to keep Charles happy receded, so they don't care as much anymore if keeping Mary happy. But she continued to say Mass and keep a strict Catholic household because she doesn't care. But she was now more than ever afraid that the council would attempt to disturb her. She wrote to Charles declaring that, like, she trusted him and she regarded him as her father in spiritual and temporal matters. And she asked him what she must do because our kingdom is daily approaching nearer to spiritual and material ruin and matters grow worse day by day.
Wow.
She had heard that her household servants would soon be excluded from all Catholic services held under her roof and that she would be ordered to conform to the Act of Uniformity. So the emperor again asked for an assurance from England that his cousin would be allowed to, you know, follow her own religion, because people should be allowed to do that. But that's not why they're asking. They want Catholicism to be in charge. But, like, you know, we still should let people follow the religion that they want to. But Mary was now basically just, like, waiting for the axe to fall. She wasn't summoned or visited by the council, but Elizabeth, who had conformed to the statutes, remained in high favor. I would also like to add that she is, like, a teenager. and that she was already, like, she and Edward had Protestant-leaning education. So, like, she's also way closer to Edward's age. Maybe so maybe he just wants a sister. But Mary won't listen. But Vanderdelft observed, it seems that they have a higher opinion of her for conforming with others and observing the new decrees than of the Lady Mary, who remains constant to Catholic faith. I don't know what he thought he was doing with that statement. Obviously, they have a higher opinion of her since she conformed to what they wanted her to do. And Mary's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't think that you're getting across the point that you want to get across. At the end of April 1550, Mary summoned Vanderdelft to her residence near Malden in Essex. She was really, really, like, upset, and she was determined to leave the country because if Edward were to die, she told the ambassador that she would be far better out of the kingdom because as soon as he were dead, before the people knew it, they would kill me too. Yeah. Mary's 34 now, and she's been contemplating escape for, like, actually a pretty long time. In September the previous year, before Somerset's fall, she sent the emperor a ring and a message that she wanted to flee England and seek refuge with him. But Charles responded to her and told her that she shouldn't be encouraged in this matter because of the difficulties of getting her out of the realm and the cost of supporting her at the imperial court. He's like, I don't want to pay for you, though. So, like, no. But now he was faced with her continued persecution, and she literally isn't leaving him alone. I need to get out of here. So he does agree to support her in her wish. He had held back as long as possible, but he agreed that it was now imperative to resort to this because of the attitude adopted in England. It was arranged that Mary's escape should coincide with a change of imperial ambassador in mid-May. Vanderdelft had been in England for 6 years, so no one was going to be, like, suspicious if he left. Like, if he came for, like, a month and then was like, bye, people would be like, where are you going? You just got here, but he's been long enough. Once he had formally taken leave, his ship would be diverted to waters off the Essex coast for long enough to meet a boat bringing Mary from Malden. But with the plan set, there was actually, in, like, England, there was fear of renewed popular unrest, and so extra watches were placed on the roads near Woodham Walter, which was where she was staying. So there wasn't any chance of her getting by without being recognized. So they had to come up with another plan. On the evening of Monday, June 30th, 1550, three imperial warships arrived off the coast near Malden under the command of a Dutchman, Cornelius Skepperus, who was the admiral of the imperial fleet. The next day, Jehan Dubois, secretary to the imperial embassy in London, rode ashore disguised as a grain merchant. The plan that was devised over the previous months would see Mary escape under cover of darkness from Woodham Walter to the sea, which was 2 miles away. She would then be rowed out to the waiting ships and taken to the Low Countries and the court of Charles's sister, the Regent Mary of Hungary. Low-key, a pretty okay plan. But it doesn't happen. In the early hours of July 2nd, Dubois arrived in Malden, but there was no one to meet him. So he sent an urgent detailed dispatch to Robert Rochester, one of Mary's senior officers. Hours later, Dubois and Rochester met on the pretext of trading grain. Though Dubois expected them to, like, confirm the final details of the plan, Rochester actually called the whole scheme into question. He said that he thought Mary's imminent flight was unnecessary because she wouldn't be, you know, in no way molested before the end of Parliament, and Parliament wasn't supposed to meet until the following Michaelmas at the earliest, so at which point she would have the advantage of being at her house in St. Osyth, which was also in Essex, but it had a garden, and it was easier to reach the open sea from there. He said it's basically too dangerous for her to attempt this with a watch posted on every single road near where she is. So they just don't want her to get, you know, hurt. Rochester explained that he's like, if you understand me, what I say is not that my lady does not wish to go, but that she wishes to go if she can. Dubois demanded clarification, and the thing was now a question of yes or no. A decision had to be made. The men of Harwich had seen the ships, and it wasn't going to be long before the council was informed that they were there. That evening, Dubois rode in secret to visit Mary. Rochester voiced his concerns again, and the imperial secretary grew frustrated. Fun. As the plan was agreed, word came that the bailiffs of Malden wanted to impound Dubois's boat on suspicion that it was associated with the warship at Stansgate. According to Dubois, Mary started to panic, asking, what will we do? What will become of me? She feared how the emperor would take it if it turned out impossible to go now after I have so often importuned his majesty on the subject. So she's like, he's going to be mad at me because I wouldn't leave him alone about it. Dubois was like, we need to take you right away. And Rochester was like, no, it's literally impossible. The watch is going to be doubled now and men would be posted on the church tower. At this point, Mary became hysterical. And she kept shrieking, but what is to become of me? It was decided that Rochester would contact her again within 10 or 12 days with an exact date when they would be ready to put the plan into action, but no further attempt was made. Because to have fled would have been to gamble, because if Mary died when if Edward died when Mary was abroad, she wouldn't have any hope of getting her, crown. So if she stayed, she might be deprived of her household and be left to face dangers alone. So there was like both danger in going and danger in staying. But Mary procrastinated on making this decision. I feel you.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm great at procrastinating too, Mary. We're best friends. Then she changed her mind. She accepted that to win her rightful throne and to restore Catholicism, which, you know, she thinks that's like her duty from God. She needed to be in England, and so she resolved to stay and fight. I'd just like to say that literally every single book I've ever read about Catherine of Aragon, she's like, it is my duty to be Queen of England. So I, when, like, Arthur dies, she's like, well, it was my duty to be Queen of England, so I have to marry Henry. And then she just, like, won't give up because she's like, it's my duty to be Queen of England. Everyone's told me that my entire life. So I'm like mother, like daughter. Got some duties. But unfortunately for Mary, by Christmas, she had run out of excuses to avoid attending court. She's gone through the whole list, apparently. And all three Tudor siblings gathered for the reunion, which had been postponed from the previous year. I don't know anything about what Elizabeth did. I guess she was just at Christmas. Edward's now 12, so she's 16, I guess. I can't do math, but she's 4 years older than him. And he rebuked Mary for hearing mass in the chapel. She continued to argue with him that he wasn't old enough to make up his own mind about religion. Sweetheart, he's 12. Like, and also he's been the king for, like, since he was 9.
I think he's okay.
He can always change his mind. Can I just say that? Yeah. But he demanded her obedience. She resisted, and both of them were reduced to tears. They were crying. Because she cares about him. That's why she wants him to... Because she honestly believes that he's going to go to hell for not being Catholic. And she doesn't want him to go to hell because he's her brother. And he believes that she should listen to him. And so they're both crying.
Not at all.
Just not a fun time. No, I feel really bad for both of them. Writing later to the Privy Council, she blamed its members for turning her brother against her. So she's not mad at him. Oh, she's mad at the Privy Council. because they turned him against her. So she's like, it's not his fault. Oh. It's yours because you guys are in charge of what he thinks. So your fault. Although Edward protested that he didn't think badly of her, he remained determined that she submit. On January 17th, 1551, she received letters from the Privy Council ordering that mass would no longer be allowed to be heard in her household. Even though she claimed that her general health and the attack of catarrh in the head did not permit her to answer their points in detail, sentence by sentence, she disputed the assertion that no promise had been made to Charles V as to the practice of mass. She's like, bestie, no. Once again, she emphasized her poor health in an attempt to bring the argument with Edward to an end. She said, were you to know what pain I suffer and bending down my head to write, you would not wish to give me occasion to do it. My health is more unstable than that of any creature, and I have all the greater need to rejoice in the testimony of pure conscience.
Okay then, babe.
She's so extra. A week later, Edward wrote back and he advised Mary that he would see that his laws were obeyed. Mary would be permitted to speak frankly and she would be listened to if she agreed to abide by Edward's response. As for the second part of her offense, the transgression of our laws, Edward made it clear that he would not tolerate the abuse of his office as king. Yeah. He summed up his position in a postscript, which he actually wrote in his own hand. It says, sister, consider that an exception has been made in your favor this long time past to incline you to obey and not to harden you in your resistance. He couldn't say more and worse things because my duty would compel me to use harsher and angrier words. But this I will say with certain intention, that I will see my laws strictly obeyed, and those who break them shall be watched and denounced. Mary wasn't expecting her little brother to yell at her like that. And she's stunned. Replying 2 days later, she declared that his words, accusing her of being a breaker of his laws and inciting others to do the same, had caused her more suffering than any illness, even unto death. Yeah. We're being extra dramatic today, I see, Miss Mary. But, like, also,
yeah,
I understand being upset about that. Because, you know, he's basically like, I am really mad at you. And she's like, but what? You're my brother. You literally wrote me. And you're like, you're my favorite person in the whole world, Mary. I just don't write you because I don't write my... it's just like I don't play with my favorite toys the most. No. So I think that that's not a fun time. She had been promised free expression of her faith, and so she implored him to command his ambassador in Brussels to learn from the emperor the truth concerning the said promise, that he could see that she wasn't guilty of anything. She was like, bestie, I need to live as I want to do. And she reiterated that rather than offend him and her conscience, she would lose all that I have left in the world in my life too. So she's like, I would rather die than offend you. Here's the thing though, Mary, you already have offended him. What do you think he meant when he wrote that? Charles again made representations to the Privy Council through his new ambassador. I cannot say this name. It is a mess. Schcheve. It's S-S-C-H-E-Y-F-V-E. That guy. But Edward remained firm. In March, to affirm his determination, he summoned Mary to court and was like, no further disobedience is going to be tolerated. Edward warned her of the dangers of continuing to practice the old religion. Mary told him again that he was not yet old enough to be making decisions. And she assured him, riper age and experience will teach your majesty much more yet. But Edward has a clapback.
What is that? Tell us.
I love his clapback. It is beautiful. You may also have somewhat to learn. None are too old for that. So he's like, you may be telling me that I'm too young. He's like, no one's too old to learn. You have to learn stuff too.
Good job.
It's like beautiful. I'm really proud of him for that. Jane would be like, what? I don't think Jane knew how to do clapbacks. So Maybe she did.
No.
I don't know. I just don't feel like that would be up her alley. Mary reasoned that even if, like, she wasn't supposed to hear Mass, she hoped that as her brother, he would have enough respect to allow her to continue in the observance of the old religion and prevent her from being troubled in any way. Did he want to take away her life rather than the old religion in which she desired to live and die? And Edward responded that he wished for no such sacrifice. She's like, you're my brother. You should let me do what I want. Do you want me to want to die? And he's like, no. No, I don't. Please don't die. The meeting broke up unresolved. She left him, beseeching him not to listen to anyone who spoke ill of her, whether about religion or anything else. And she was like, I'm always going to be your obedient sister. And Edward replied that he had never doubted that. Bruh, where? When? She's not been an obedient sister for the last, like, few years, honey. Yes, I have never doubted that. I think he has. I think that is called being nice. In October 1551, Henry II of France declared war on Charles with the intention of recapturing Italy and securing European supremacy. The renewal of Habsburg-Valois hostilities brought in an increased fear of imperial intervention in England. Mary of Hungary, Charles's sister, was certain that England would join France in the war and so proposed an invasion of England to gain a strong port from which to defend the Netherlands and then also place Mary on the throne. Woohoo! Yeah, but for some reason, pressure eased on Mary during this time. Maybe they were trying to make her happy so that she wouldn't be like, yeah, Mary, let's do it. Invade. when Mary of Guise, the Dowager Queen of Scotland, visited Edward for several days in October, and Mary was actually invited to a court to accompany and entertain her, Edward sent his own message to her that he would enjoy the pleasure of Mary's company. But she pleaded ill again. It's literally like in Mean Girls. I can't go out. I'm sick. yeah, she's Karen Smith. For that and that only. And then Edward goes, boo. Yeah, she's like, sorry, I can't come, Edward. But over the next few months, they're trying to reconcile with her again. In March 1552, her servants that they had put in the tower earlier, Rochester, Englefield, and Waldegrave, were released and returned to Mary's household. Yay! 2 months later, Mary rode through London to St. John's with a bunch of, like, people and went by barge to Greenwich to visit her brother. In April, Edward had written in his chronicle, I feel sick of the measles and the smallpox. I love how descriptive this child is. I thought he was supposed to be smart. Just saying. He made a quick recovery, but by the winter of 1552, he was seriously ill once more, and his body was racked by a hacking cough. The council made no further overt attempts to suppress Mary's masses because Edward's health was deteriorating, and it was prudent to, get the good favor of someone who was so close to the throne. They're like, we don't want her mad at us, guys. The year 1552 actually saw the climax of the Edwardian Reformation. In the second book of Common Prayer and 42 Articles, the real presence in the Eucharist was rejected outright. Altars were stripped from churches throughout the country and replaced by communion tables, and images were whitewashed. I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means whitewashed, like they painted white faces, but like I'm going to assume it's just like cleaned. I hope so. Because Edward, what? The long-term survival, unfortunately, of the new Protestantism was under threat because Mary was Edward's heir. But it was clear to anyone who had eyes or didn't have eyes, anyone who literally knows anything about what was going on in the country, knew that she would halt the process of Reformation to restore Catholicism. What? We didn't know that. Definitely couldn't figure that out. But that was a prospect that Edward would not agree with. He's like, no, that's not happening. He needed to overturn his father's will and the parliamentary statute of 1554 that decreed Mary his successor. Yay. On February 10th, 1553, Mary wrote to court along Fleet Street, accompanied by more than 200 lords and ladies. Why does she need this many people? Just a question, Mary. What? She was met on the outskirts of the city by John Dudley and knights and gentlemen who escorted her to the gates of Whitehall. There she was more honorably received and entertained with greater magnificence than ever before, as if she had been Queen of England. They're treating her really nice right now. But for several days, Edward couldn't see her because he contracted a feverish cold. Woohoo. Following Mary's visit, the 15-year-old's health actually got worse, but they hid his decline from both of his sisters. Mary got false information that he was actually feeling better. I don't know who told her that and why they told her that, but yeah, they told her that he was better. And she sent a letter giving thanks for his recovery and praying that he was going to continue to reign for a really long time. That was her final contact with her brother. Yeah. In early spring, Edward had drawn up in his own hand his device for the succession, by which he'd sought to direct the succession and specifically disinherit his sisters. Mary and Elizabeth were excluded on the grounds that they were both bastards. Yay! The line of succession was transferred from the family of Edward's cousins, the Greys, the male heirs of Frances Grey, Duchess of Suffolk, the daughter of Henry VIII's sister, Mary, and the male heirs of her eldest daughter, Lady Jane Grey. Women were, Edward determined, unfit to rule in their own right, and through marriage they might subject the realm to foreign domination. Oh, Edward. Edward was relying on a yet unborn male heir. Literally, there is no male heir born yet. Oh, he is dying. What does he think is going to happen? Bestie. On May 21st, Lady Jane Grey was married to Guildford Dudley, Northumberland's son. But within days, Edward's health got, like, way, way worse. So there was going to be no time for Jane to become pregnant. I guess he thought he was just going to be able to live for 9 more months. I don't know. Here's the line, Grace. Edward was forced to overcome his misogyny. And in his own hand, he had to alter his device. Whereas originally he had left the crown to Lady Jane's heirs male, he edited the text and changed it to Lady Jane and her heirs male. The Protestant Lady Jane was Edward's successor to the throne, officially. As Edward lay on his deathbed, struggling to breathe, Northumberland took the first steps to execute the plan. He needed to ensure that Mary wasn't, like, suspicious of the succession, and so he sought to lull her into a false state of security. He regularly sent her news of the king's health and promised that if Edward died, she would be queen with his assistance. At first, Mary believed him, but then she learned the truth, because she's smart. On or about July 1st, her closest advisors told her of Northumberland's deceit. Mary, once again, knew what she was doing. She feigned ignorance, and she tricked the Duke into thinking that he could get possession of her whenever he pleased. At the time, she was staying at Hunsdon in Hertfordshire, which was about 20 miles from where he was. So, like, it would be really, really easy for him to grab her, you know, if Edward died. But her household servants had already formulated a plan for her escape. She was summoned to Edward's bedside when he was dying, but on July 3rd, she actually received a tip-off from a spy at court that the King's End was near. So she didn't go. She's like, no, sorry, I'm sick. On the night of the 4th, she fled with 6 attendants, 4 men and 2 women. The pretext was the illness of her physician, Roland Sturlock, so I guess Roland was like, I'm sick. Which, he's a man, his voice is deeper, which forced her to move household in case there was infection. Throughout the night, Mary and her party traveled. They rode north through Hertfordshire to Sawston Hall in Cambridgeshire. Yeah. I love how they all just have shire. It's really original, Britain. Just wanted to say good job. The home of Sir John Huddleston, a local Catholic gentleman. At first light, she rose, heard mass, and then set out again. From Sawston, she rode the next 28 miles virtually nonstop. Okay, so, like, I don't really know a lot about miles or horseback riding, but I'm pretty sure that's, like, really far. Just, like, it seems like a lot. Finally, she reached Hengrave Hall, which was the seat of the Earl of Bath, just outside Bury St. Edmunds. There she rested briefly before continuing on to Euston Hall, where she was met by the Dowager Lady Burg. When she had been informed of Edward's death on the previous day, the 6th, she had reacted with cautious suspicion. The messenger, Robert Raines, was sent by Sir Nicholas Throckmorton, who was the gentleman of Edward's privy chamber known for his Protestant sympathies. Whatever the truth, she's like, yeah, maybe he's dead, I don't know, had made getting out of there even more urgent. Mary hurried on to her house at Kenninghall, Norfolk, where the news of the king's death was confirmed. Rip Edward. Edward, wow. That's the end of your what life and segue. The end of this episode. That was low-key dark for Edward. yeah, poor Edward. Yeah, that's like a rip for him. I don't know. Poor child.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
It's fine.
It's fine. So, like, that's the end of the episode, y'all. You should
woot woot
our TikTok. I'm actually posting on it once a day at least, and we have also, like, people are following us on it sometimes, so, like, you should go follow our TikTok, not so bloody Mary _podcast. You should go follow our Instagram, not so bloody Mary _podcast. You should go follow our Twitter, which I have posted like 5 things on. Twitter makes me uncomfortable. I don't know what to do with it. Because, like, TikTok likes their sounds. Twitter, yeah, I have to, like, actually type things and be funny. I know. But I go follow there, because then it won't make me feel as uncomfortable, because when Katie's the only one that I was going to see it, I'm like, hi, Katie from Queen's Podcast. Yeah, if she follows us on Twitter.
Because we know you're listening right now.
Hi, Katie from Queen's Podcast. here's my Twitter post. She's not listening.
Oh yeah.
I would bet lots of money on that she's not listening. If she did, I would cry. You would have to prepare yourself for a bunch of texts, probably at the middle of the night, that were all in caps, that were just like, I'm dying, I'm screaming, ah, and then I would tell you what it was until you showed up. So, yeah. No. Okay. It's fine. Yeah, you should go follow Grace on TikTok at the lovely _bookworm. You should not follow me on TikTok, because it's literally my face on our podcast TikTok anyway, so you can see me there. And have, like, a good time with everything, y'all. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what everyone's lives are like right now. If you're in the if you're in the United States and you're vaccinated, I want to be you.
Yeah, I want to be you.
If you're anywhere and you're vaccinated, I want to be you. I want my mom to be you, to be honest, mostly. Because teachers should get vaccinated. Just saying. Because kids are gross. Just putting that out there. Kids are disgusting, and peace teachers out, have to be homies. With us all the time. Okay.
Everyone,
peace out, safe. Homies. Have a good time.
Bye.
Doing life. Yeah.